Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
By way of introduction, I just want to say that if you don't know who Jonathan Zittrain is, you're in the wrong place. Please leave the room. Please turn off the web stream and needlessly sucking up bandwidth.
Wow. Let's wait while they leave.
This is the standard introduction.
I was just saying something about needlessly sucking up.
Which great length at another location. Jonathan is going to describe a project that is near and dear to very many of us, which is the manifestation of Jonathan's vision of capturing the wisdom and the energy of the crowds who heard it. Without further ado, I turn it over to you, Jonathan. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you especially, and Vandana, and Jeffrey, and others like Sally, and Seth, and it starts to become the end of the Wizard of Oz. Thanks, everybody, and you were there, and you were there. But what we're about to talk about today has been an amazing team effort, and I just know that all of us are so pleased to have it at a stage where we actually have something to show and for you all to tell us what we're doing wrong. So to give you some background on this project, the highest level view of it is the conception of the internet inspired, among other people, by Charlie, of a place where, I don't know, how do you put it, Doc? Anyone can build it.
Nobody owns it. Everybody can use it. Anybody can improve it.
Just what he said. Of course, what the it is, as a result, changes over time. And trying to get ourselves out of a mode of letting the internet just happen to us, but actually become active participants within it, is one of the major goals of the Berkman Center, and to become participants towards some sense of the public interest. In this case, one of the features and perhaps bugs of the net is that there is not much of a sense as you surf as to what's going on. What's going on with your own connection? What's going on with other surfers near you? The experience is, in a metaphorical way, an autistic one. And this is different from other networks that have more intelligence built within them, both to their disadvantage, but in this sense to their advantage. And we're eager to help create an emergent sense of what's going on with this network, especially at a time when network blockages and filtering and other issues are on the rise. Right now, when you can't get to somewhere from where you are, the number of problems that could be between you and the destination are legion, and there's no easy way to figure out what's going on. So it was our aim to help answer those questions in the prosaic way by trying to enlist people at large to help answer them. Our first attempt to answer this question started, I guess, in the fall of 2002, when we heard rumor that there were internet filtering taking place in various places around the world, but nobody really had documented just how much and what was filtered. So we started to place long-distance international telephone calls from Griswold Hall to internet service providers in places like Beijing, as if we were in a hotel in Beijing wanting to get online. And then we would just play 20,000 questions. We would ask for one website after another and record where we could get and where we couldn't. In order to figure out what sites to test, we had to just generate sites that we figured would be sensitive. So we would go, for example, to Google and type in a search term like Tibet and look at the results, and then take each result on Google for Tibet of the top 10 and then the top 100 and pipe it through our modem connection and ask for each site. And as you can see, at that time, we found all 10 of the first 10 hits on Google for Tibet blocked, and over 60 of the top 100 blocked. And along the left here, you can see some other URLs that were generated using search terms, again, designed to try to find interesting stuff that might well be blocked. We augmented that by actually doing a call to the internet at large, to people on the net, to test sites in real time if they were of interest to people at large. You just put in your name and URL to test and hit submit, and we would pipe it through our next test run. We got thousands of additional sites that we found to be blocked as a result of asking people on the net randomly to perform these tests. This stopped working both when the handshake from the modem wouldn't happen anymore and when the dean got the phone bill. So we had to resort to other means, which included open proxies, which I won't go into right now, but not the most reliable thing in the world, but does generate some data. And we also started teaming up with our partners at the OpenNet Initiative, the University of Toronto, the University of Cambridge, later the University of Oxford. Let's just do that again. There we are. And the OpenNet Initiative started a major, thorough project, in part with lots of funding from the MacArthur Foundation and some others, initially the Open Society Institute, to rigorously test internet filtering in about 50 states around the world. And that included a variety of techniques, some of which included sending people places, some of which included recruiting people in places, and a bunch of other things that then resulted in the book Access Denied, and its sequel is in progress right now, and the Access Denied book has the fruits of our research. But this still is something that doesn't exactly scale. As soon as you're done, you basically start all over again, like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's done in a centralized way that requires a substantial amount of funding. So our next plan, and the one we're going to talk about today, is what we call HERDICT, as in verdicts from the herd. We're going to add that tagline, because otherwise I realize HERDICT makes no sense at all. And as some of you have heard me say, the actual icon for HERDICT is a sheep, which you can see up here in a Firefox toolbar. If it's sheep we're using as the herd, sheep we actually know come in flocks, so it should really be flock-dict, but we couldn't bring ourselves to call it that, so we just indulge the idiosyncrasy there. So the first part of HERDICT is a little toolbar, an add-on that you can put into Firefox. There's also a version, I think, released this week for Internet Explorer, or next week. And as you're surfing along, the sheep will change color. Green indicates a site that no one out there has reported as blocked. If you go to CNN, that doesn't seem to have any problems. If we go to anonymizer.com, a proxy service, the sheep turns gray to indicate its displeasure with the situation, that there are people out there that say they can't get to Anonymizer. And I think, actually, if you go to Facebook, the sheep will turn red because it means people near you have reported Facebook as inaccessible. So that gives you some sense of what others are saying. If you get to a site you can't get to, you can actually click on the sheep and say, I can't get there from here, what's going on? And it turns out that the act of asking this question is what helps seed the round of data in order to answer it. Because as more and more people say they can't get there from here, you are able to start to interpolate, because Internet protocol addresses do have a topography to them. There is a geographic component, a national component to them, and an Internet service provider component. So you can start to say, I see a bunch of people in China say they can't get to BBC. People in Britain say they can. There must be something going on, we infer in the first round, from China. And at the ISP level, you can say a bunch of people from General Motors say they can't get to this union website, but everybody else say they can. Something's going on at General Motors. Now, along with the toolbar, we have the website, which includes the Herdometer, a Twitter Vision style mashup, which you see here, and it shows you reports as they come in. So somebody at UAE is reporting some sites, and you can see the URL of the site, and if you just let it sit, it will tell you more and more sites that have been reported. Here's one over in India that was just reported. And if you're at all curious, at some point you can click on the URL and start to see more about the number of reports that it's been getting. It's gotten two inaccessible reports. from UAE, one from Jordan, interestingly, one from the United States. And when you click on the country, it actually will go in and tell you more data about the reports in the ISP and an opportunity for somebody to leave a comment to help start to narrow down what's going on. You can also sort entirely by country. Let's see if this takes us to where I think it will. So this is now everything that we've gotten out of UAE, as in secret Dubai diary, unblock websites, anonymous proxy, Arab Times, reported once or twice as inaccessible. Now, once somebody makes a report, it's helpful to know if others are experiencing the same thing. One constant about the internet is that we know that there are tons of bored people with nothing to do. So we have set up a site to cater to that audience. And instead of playing solitaire or doing the ESP game or something, you can go to a site that we refer in-house as Am I Blocked or Not, which truly was inspired by Am I Hot or Not. Had there not been Am I Hot or Not, we would not have had this idea. And you can enter what we call, more formally, the reporter. I still like Am I Blocked or Not. And the reporter will go ahead and start taking you to sites that have been reported. And from your location, you can say whether you can get there. So for example, tools.itscales.com has been reported inaccessible 10 times in the United States, 19 times worldwide. And look, it's not loading in our little frame in the quarter either. We get a network timeout. So we can actually put that in the comments. It already has populated this box with some stuff about us. I guess we're at school right now. Is that fair? And we don't know anything about the category, and it's inaccessible to us. It says, thank you very much, and it moves on to the next site. Ynetnews.com was reported inaccessible no times in the United States, but one time worldwide. We can see it just fine, so we can go ahead, and if we're curious where it was reported, we click here. It opens up a new window. It looks like somebody in Syria said they couldn't get there. Well, we can get there ourselves. And you can just see one site at a time what others are saying they can't get to online, and then see whether you can get there. And with that, you very quickly start to fill in a picture of what's being filtered. As one ant moves down the trail, other ants can follow it, and you start to very quickly figure out. Oh, remember the Snuggle? Have you been seeing that ad? They have that one of them there with the football game with the Snuggle. It's like, yeah, right, I'm going to wear a Snuggle to a football game. So, anyway, this is clearly accessible to us, and we say as much. And here, when we talk about a blockage, we're actually very careful in the verbiage around the site and the conception of it. We're not talking about censorship or filtering outright. We're talking about accessibility or inaccessibility, which is a subjective experience to your brain. If you go to YouTube and you're wanting to see a video and it says, sorry, this video has been removed, as far as we're concerned, that is inaccessible to you, even though we already know that YouTube is communicating to you. It's not going to show it to you. It's not a block in the middle. It's not a standard filtering, but it is information that you expected that you couldn't get. And part of the site goes by URL rather than by entire site. So there we wouldn't say, oh, YouTube is blocked. We'd say this URL has an issue with it. And very quickly, as stuff gets taken down, we're able to highlight that and have people know about that. And as YouTube, for example, starts to do geographic-based filtering, YouTube, for example, has some videos that insult the Thai king that are visible to us here in America but not in Thailand. That will become known as people are triangulating and saying, I can't see it, I can, I can't, that kind of thing. So we even may tie that part into a site that some of you may have heard of called YouTube.com. It's a kind of clever name, but really hard to tell people the URL because you don't hear tomb, even though I say that. And when you say, no, YouTube as in Tomb Raider, it doesn't quite work. But anyway, YouTube has a series of URLs at YouTube that have content that have been removed, and we're, I think, looking into integrating that into our feed so that as YouTube gets reports, we can see it here and again track the ants to do reporting. Maybe I should stop there and see if Rob or Vandana or Jeff or others on the team have anything they want to add or mention, and otherwise just throw it wide open for discussion. Yes, ma'am.
Could I pretend that a site was blocked and report it, and then could I create like a flurry of lies because me and all of my co-conspirators wanted you and therefore the public in general to think that something is being blocked?
Absolutely. Just like when you were done, you could go and vandalize a Wikipedia page. So yes, this, as a kind of wisdom of the crowds thing, is susceptible to people in the crowd who are out for no good, and they could try to salt this with bad data. We have some tools already built within, so that if we detect a pattern of spurious reports from a particular IP address, we can just pretend those never happened, sort of thing. And our hope is, and I think the reality is, that so long as the good apples outnumber the bad ones in some critical mass, that spurious noise can be dismissed. It also feeds our existing and continuing OpenNet team that does the more traditional centralized research. It gives them leads to test, and then they can say our formal, as one of our team members calls it, gold standard OpenNet testing has confirmed or not confirmed that kind of thing. But you're right, it is otherwise susceptible to that kind of spurious data, and I suppose at some point somebody could even try to write an API connector so that you don't have to sit there and be bad. You can have a macro do it for you. And at some point, we may have to cross that bridge and figure out if we need more defense against that.
Yeah, because it makes me nervous because of, like, the use of human rights by different political, you know, like, anti-Castro people could, you know, make a whole big thing, and then the pro, you know, I can see that it could be dangerous, but isn't there, but somewhere everything must be, I'm not a technical, like, computer person, but somewhere those, like, the addresses must be recorded, right? Like,
well, we record
the
IP addresses of the reporters, which again have a certain topology. So if I were to change this drop-down and say, no, I'm not in the United States, I'm in Cuba, and I can't get to something, that would serve as even more of a flag. If there are Cuban IP addresses saying they can't get to something and they confirm they're in Cuba, that might require us to have somebody in Cuba to try to validate. But again, there might be a lot of other people in Cuba that are either affirming or not that kind of thing. But many of these things have this vulnerability. The ESP game only works, for example, the image labeler trick, if you try. You know, if you look at a picture of a car and say it's a boy, especially if somebody else says it's a boy, the image labeler will say that car is a boy. Yeah, David.
Jonathan, I guess the one thing that I've been thinking about since I first learned about it is it seems to me the biggest risk, and I don't know if you've thought about it, is that the people who are doing the blocking are going to block the sheep server because they don't want the reporting.
Yes.
So is the sheep smart enough to try and get around that?
I'm going to turn that over to Jeffrey Licht, who coded virtually all of this. And I will leave it to his judiciousness to say whether we want security through obscurity or whether we want to announce proudly our countermeasures.
Yeah, I think it's a yes-no question. No need to give privilege on
that. We already have had an experience whereby the URL which you used to report a particular site included the name of the site that's getting blocked. So we fixed that. I think in the longer term,
the only real countermeasure we have is to enable people to access this over SSL, which, you know, is not, I guess you can block, but is more difficult and not as frequently done.
It could be smart nodes and proxy servers. I mean, you know, they can be the radar detector game, you know.
There is also one other possible, you know, another thing we've thought about is, you know, if you're at the toolbar, you submit a report, submit it by email, which isn't going to get blocked, and we could load that up automatically and track that as a report. So.
It is on. It's just for the webcast. It's just not amplifying in the room. The other thing is, my sense is that when the first state tries to block the functioning of herdict reporting, and by the way, we hope that they wouldn't hasten to do it because it's not a circumvention tool. It's not going to show you something you can't get to. In this window is only your own computer trying to get there. But should they try to block it anyway, I take that as the first milestone of success. It means that we have enough mind share and functioning that we actually are enough on their radar that something's going on. And at that point, we may have to get tricky and talk to our friends across the quad at Tor or start to see if there are other ways to make it happen. At the moment, though, it's framed as standard web traffic. It's not doing anything tricky like VOIP. I know there are lots of hands up. Maybe we should just sweep down the room. Yeah.
One of the first things. Oh, sorry.
You only need the mic here.
Yeah, the table has its own mics.
Okay. Well, at any rate.
Talk to the table.
I've been known to do stranger things. Thank you. But at any rate, when you say that, you know, if somebody says that they're in Cuba, but they're actually coming through the United States, so on and so forth, one of the things that might end up being a high load on your staff, you know, the human intervention that you need to do, is that if somebody is blocked from Cuba, they're going to end up going through the Tor network or an open proxy and come out from someplace else with their reports. Do you have some sort of plan to be able to, you know, deal with the human load of being able to verify those sort of reports?
Yeah, I talk in my book about the procrastination principle and its benefits. So no, we are not trying to solve the problem of whatever handful of people none of us in this room can say in Cuba using Tor to get around a block, but then to report that they are blocked. To me, that's, I mean, if you're smart enough to use Tor, in this case, you're not out to subvert the system, you're out to help, at which point you wouldn't want to use Tor to make the reports. You would actually be surfing, waiting for the blockages. The whole point is to get them so you can report them.
People will do that.
If you mean if Herdict itself is blocked,
right,
will people use Tor so they can make the reports?
Right.
And at that point, they can use the drop-downs to correct.
Okay.
And, you know, at some point we might see, there's a bunch of people coming in. And, of course, the Tor exit nodes are pretty well known, at which point we will know from the IP address, I see it's somebody using Tor, and we'll have some chance to adapt. But, you know, if we get 1,000 reports, you're right, it's going to take people to sort through that. Just going down the table with our other, David?
What's your hope for how this information will be used? I mean, it looks like a great set of information. At the most hopeful, what happens to it? How does the world get better? Because
the world gets better because as filtering takes place in near real time, which currently goes basically unnoticed, unless it is to one of the most popular sites in the region where the blocking takes place, that will become outed. That may make it a dicier proposition to filter a site if you are a state that happens to be sensitive to disapprobation for filtering sites that have political content or for reasons that, you know, the UN Universal Declaration on Political Rights would have an issue with. It also provides data to academics and others about the priorities and vulnerabilities of a given state. I think you can learn a lot about China from what it chooses to filter. To the extent that it's, I see, all about Taiwan, Tiananmen, and Tibet, and in fact, in October it was about Tibet, but in November not so much anymore, that might give you a window into what's going on in China that otherwise you wouldn't have. And finally, success to me means a sense of participation on the net, that as people adopt and use this thing, and it's kind of fun to have the sheep following you around as you go over the net, you start to get into a mode of conceiving of the internet the way that I personally want to see people think about the internet, that it's something that is improved by your own activities, it's something where you're contributing to a commons of a sort, and together we're providing, to borrow a term from, maybe hijack a term from Bill Gates, a digital nervous system for this network that otherwise we either simply do not have or exist in fragments as trade secrets and a handful of firms that have the way stations so that they can detect filtering. There may be a more direct benefit, by the way, to companies that want to know, where is my website accessible? I'm trying to get customers. I need to know where I'm blocked and where I'm not. There's a phenomenon that people may not be familiar with. Much blocking, but not all, happens by internet protocol address. China, for example, will figure that the data at this IP address is bad and block that IP address and instruct the routers.
those IP addresses may get reassigned days, weeks, months later, or shared in round-robin fashion with lots of different sites. So you may just be like a timber company or something, and you are blocked in all of China because you inherited dirty IP addresses that had been, they have a history with them. And there's no way easily to know that when you're having connectivity issues around the world. This would start to out that. This would start to give IP addresses their own, could I do a title search now on an IP address, figure out where it's been, what trouble it's been into, and what's going on. And there's obvious benefits to getting into the network neutrality space when various ISPs or firms for their employees are playing with connectivity. Chris, you have something?
Yeah, just a suggestion maybe. So you
want to pipe up? I don't know.
Do you want me to use the mic or?
No, just.
So in the case that you are blocked, one other way. So I mean, the way that you evade censorship efforts is to piggyback on a technology that the government won't block. Given that these messages of, hey, this site is being blocked right now are actually rather short, one thing that you could piggyback on would be Twitter, which would just to say, this is my subnet, this is the site I'm trying to access, and you know maybe one or two other bits of information, send that out there, and then you could have a program that would automatically be looking through Twitter space to see any messages that were tagged this way.
Yeah, Twitter might be one of those sites that gets filtered pretty early in a state that's nervous about Web 2.0, but otherwise you're right that pretty much any web functionality that has anything approximating a status update or something would be amenable to an API-style path from reporter to reported. You could even come up with a hashtag on Twitter that would be the, this is a Herdic report, and agglomerate them that way. Absolutely. And it would give you even an independent database of the reports in case we went down or something. You could actually search the hashtags later. Yeah, or SMTP, or anything. I mean, DNS, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, starting down that line, we've already set up a Herdic Twitter account, and we're starting to tweet on it. The idea is to start building that community and use it in one of many ways to get around.
So you mentioned YouTube as a potential source of takedown information.
Yes.
Things for people to test. How else do you use the system? I mean, you're not entirely relying on just people's web browsing feeds. You also have these feeds. What kind of feeds do you have?
Well, one of our initial ways of seeding the site is with our original OpenNet data. We do have, to an order of magnitude, thousands of URLs we've tested in the more formal, expensive, rigorous way, and that has already been used to seed some of the database to start the Antrails going. So that's one way to do it. We would love to actually design kind of a curriculum module so that as an exercise in whatever one of those softer classes in junior high school where the teacher doesn't quite know what to do, but it's like, you know, world affairs or something, you could have them spend a day and make some reports from where they are. And one of the barriers we want to take down to seeding and making those reports from as many corners as possible is, of course, that of language. You're looking at an English language version of our site. We have, at some substantial expense, in the pipeline, both Arabic first and next Chinese language versions of this, and of course aspire to skin the Herdic site and the toolbar in as many languages as possible, which would in turn perhaps tap into multiple additional communities of people who might install it and use it. We're also intrigued at the prospect of integrating the Herdic add-on into the default distribution of something like Mozilla, and I've been talking to the Mozilla people about that, and it'd be great to see if IE wanted to have it as a default add-in, or something like the Google Toolbar. So to the extent that we can distribute with existing channels, we would be happy to have that happen as well.
It would be even more powerful if, rather than having people have to go to herdic.org, they could instead have the really annoying thing whenever you have a site inaccessible, just like whenever you have a program crash in Windows, say, please,
would you like to report this
to Herdic?
Yeah.
That way you don't actually have to go to the website.
There may be some trickiness because there are so many different ways, especially given our subjective definition as to how a block can happen. But it may well be for a straight network timeout, you can tell me, Jeffrey, or research it, whether the add-on can be like, whoa, there's been a network timeout, I should wake up and start informing the user that you might want to report this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the one side, you're building a database of sites that are blocked to various users. The other side of that database is a database of IP addresses from which users who are very interested in blocked sites are coming. What do you do to protect the privacy of those users? I'm not terribly concerned that you can see that I have a YouTube, you know, can't get to a YouTube
right.
video. But say I'm a user in China, and you know, the Chinese government, rather than shutting you down, decides to, you know, take a careful interest in all of the people who are coming to your central server, because those are the people who are troublemakers.
Yeah, well, on the subjective side, by, again, pitching this as a network connectivity tool, we're hoping not to just make it that only the activists would be inclined to use it. And, of course, to the extent that it becomes a default distribution somewhere, now everybody's using it. We're careful not to have the add-on as it might otherwise. We could easily design an add-on that would, in the background, test sites so that you wouldn't need people to opt in to the am I blocked or not functionality. It's just while you're running it, and we also have a screensaver that's getting into the picture, it could be getting from the mothership a list of sites to test and then going out and testing them. We don't do that because we don't want to ask anyone's PC to visit a site that the person does not affirmatively want to visit. The closest edge we come to that is in the am I blocked or not. When you click next site, it's going to try to access whatever that next site is, and we've thought a little bit about that. But as far as the actual IP addresses coming in, we don't save, I think we chop off the last...
Currently we save the IP addresses, but
we don't display them. We say the ISP as we've identified it. And of course, what you're worried about is not so much the Chinese getting access to our database, but more just watching who's visiting the site. And in that sense, you know, we rely on the good offices of the person using this to decide whether somehow it would be a risk to even dare to access the site.
But any information we put up on the site is anonymous. So we don't put up your IP address, or unless you're typing in your name and address in the comments, it's not visible on the site.
And this is backed up by our knowledge through our prior research that in, say, China, trying to get to a site that's blocked is basically a parking ticket kind of wrong. It's like, nothing personal, we're just not going to let you get there. So far as we know, it's not, and now people will come knock on your door and haul you away for even trying.
I'm concerned that something like this can focus that a lot more.
Yeah.
So you can see, oh, this isn't just somebody who's idle. This is somebody who's really up to something.
Yeah, it might be. But of course, those people also are probably the people using some of the proxy services, anonymizers, the other things that you would think by this way would become a honeypot for the security services. And going through SSL, all they would know is that Herdix was, bless you, accessed, not what was transpired, not what site you were otherwise trying to get to, although they might otherwise know what site you were trying to get to because you were just trying to get there and they're the ISP. David?
It just made, countries that block SSL? I mean, it's easy, it's a port, so... Or you haven't seen that in any of your...
Not that I know of, no. And it isn't always a port. There might be ports that are the port you use for SSL.
Yeah, I mean, 443, I mean, it's typically...
Yeah.
I mean, obviously people could use other ports.
But here, we could do
I'm
SSL.
I'm just curious if there's a country that just blocks HTTPS.
You'd be undermining all e-commerce.
Yeah, it would be. I agree.
We haven't seen that yet. We don't expect to see that. That would be crazy. Collateral damage.
Yeah.
You mentioned before companies utilizing the service to see where their websites will be blocked. Do you ever foresee a future in which corporations could contract the service so that they can make a concerted effort to see where their website is blocked rather than just waiting for random users in various countries to report that it is blocked?
Well, I suppose there could be a service that could inject a site into the am I blocked or not queue that would encourage people just to say whether they could see it. Right now, the way to get into the queue is to have somebody say they can't get there. And soon, as it gets busy, right now, we haven't announced this really to anybody. This is the beginning of cutting the ribbon. We have a few friends and family, as it were, of Berkman that are using it. But as more people use it, I suppose, we would require a critical mass of blockage reports before we really start seeding it into that am I blocked or not queue. Could there be an instance in which we could allow certain people, if Amnesty or somebody had a new site and wanted to inject it into the queue,
we might well be open to that. Would we want to operate a cash and carry service where, to help fund Herdict, somebody could pay $1,000 and have their site appear in the queue? I'm not too proud to do that. I could see wanting to tag it a certain way to indicate that this is, you know, when you report here, you'll be helping a company that's helping Herdict or something like that. But sure. In fact, I would love to see this kind of monitoring or active testing as part of the services you can get when you reserve a domain name. You know how much they try to upsell you when you get a domain name at register.com. It's like, would you like fries with that? Would you like super double secret probation? No one can steal this domain name from you service. You know, yes. And so there might be, would you like to be, you know, notified, sheep talk or whatever they call it, if there's a problem, you know, and then register.com gets X percent and we get the rest. I'm not averse to having a business model for this that funds it going forward. Yes, Esther.
So you mentioned that, for example, with YouTube, if the video doesn't come up or the page comes up, then it's supposed to be recorded inaccessible.
If the video doesn't come up but the page comes up on YouTube, we are open to people saying that is inaccessible to me.
Okay, seriously. Yeah, because that wasn't obvious to me that I would know that that's supposed to be recorded.
Yeah. We have, I think, in some of our explanatory verbiage, something about that. And I think we aspire,
notice these little question marks here? I think there's supposed to be, Jeffrey, a question mark near inaccessible and accessible.
There could be.
It's going to cost us. That's a feature request. That when you click on it would tell you more about when should I click which. And you're right that we ought to have a FAQ or something, and Vandana says we do address that in the FAQ. Ideally, you'd have a runway, something that actually walks you through your first few reports, perhaps a talking paperclip, you know, something that, you know, to borrow another great idea from Bill Gates.
I mention that because it says on top, if you bring up an example, it says page, right? And
yeah.
So if you think page, then technically the page came off.
Yeah.
And that would be one of the reasons that it could be a little inaccessible.
Yeah, see, this is the closest we've come.
What does an inaccessible report mean? It means if for whatever reason, technological failure, intentional censorship, or other, you were not able to access a desired website. Now, that still we could explain more, and we should.
But I think that is a special case with YouTube because of the way that specific videos can be blocked. And I don't know, the couple sites that I've gone through, say, you know, playing this game, it seems as though with videos, it comes up fairly quickly in the comments. Like, I can get the page, but I can't get the video. And so somebody could parse through that if there was confusion. But you'd have to be willing to deal with them.
Yeah, so if we look, here's YouTube, for which there are 14 accessible reports. And this, of course, is the top page. I think there's a way, isn't there, Jeffrey, to get to every URL under YouTube?
That's an interesting one. Why do homos have to post all these links showing gay men?
But apparently, whatever it is accessible.
So somehow you've managed to take the intelligence of YouTube comments
and
bring them
integrate
them.
That was a really expensive feature. But we knew the public demanded it. So we deliver. Yeah. Speaking of other awkward moments, one of the first problems we did hypothesize for which we did not want to apply the procrastination principle is from our earlier research, we know that a big pile of the stuff filtered is porn. There were moments in the early testing in 2002 where, remember I told you we used Google to seed, we did a search on Google for free adult sex and then took, I think we got 1,000 URLs out of that and added that to the porn package that we tested. So there were moments where I'm sure at the FAS NOC, they're looking at like Griswold Hall, and it's just like they're not even really spending time to enjoy anything. It's just so. Anyway, we didn't want in that junior high school civics class, okay, class, let's test some sites. And they're all like, we can get to this, we can get to this. So we actually take all of the reports coming in and we sift them through Google Safe Search. And am I blocked or not, in the absence of a secret switch that says, give it to me straight, in the absence, or otherwise, the absence of that switch, it will actually not ask you to test sites that Google deems unsafe. That seemed a decent compromise for the kind of focus we wanted for Herdict Web, and a similar compromise we've made in our gold standard reporting, too. We didn't want to spend all of MacArthur's money getting down to the last site which porn was blocked in one place or another. Generally, the testing was done to get an overall sensitivity meter and to see whether the lists were generated roll-your-own style by the country, or ICE, that's the smart filter list of filtered sites. They're relying on America to tell them what to look at and whatnot. We had a similar dilemma with badware sites. As many of you know, we also run the Stop Badware project here, and that includes maintaining a clearinghouse of sites that if you visit with your browser, you could die. And so we would hate for sites to end up in the reporter that you then visit. You're like, I sure can get here, and now you die. So we're also connecting to Google's API on the hour, I think, and downloading the list of evil sites from Google and not including that in the Google reporter. Yes, Mr. Magician.
Yes, I was actually looking at stuff going on Twitter for Herdict just now.
Yes.
And one of the things that came up was somebody had asked, can you be in a state where basically you can get to YouTube, let's say, but YouTube will block certain parts of their site?
Can you just say? The answer to that is yes.
The answer to that is yes.
YouTube does selectively block certain websites for a small number of countries. Thailand being at the top of the list there.
And that this would then detect, because you'd be in Am I Blocked or Not, and if
right.
you're in Thailand, you would say, I am blocked,
mm-hmm.
and if you are in America, you would say, I am not.
Does the little sheet make a distinction? Because on YouTube, well, does it show me the number of all YouTube or portions of YouTube, or what does it show me?
If...
It's page or site?
It's by site.
By site, so not by page.
Say that again?
The sheet gives the sheet changes color based on reports from the site.
The overall site. So if you go to a deep link on YouTube, if YouTube overall has had a lot of block reports, the sheep is going to be angry. Which makes sense. Charlie?
Three parts. First, would you say something about what you see as, I would think of it as the big dimension of this? I mean, what you're describing is, and what you've produced is a piece of software that really is going to hold up a mirror to all of the powerful entities in the world that are using their power to filter. Mm-hmm. So first, would you say something about what you see as the political dimensions of that? Second, I'd be really curious to know what your thoughts are about how you're going to launch this into the world. This is clearly a package that becomes powerful once it's taken up. And third, have you any kind of line of defense in mind when the blowback comes from the powerful entities that somehow want to use their power to shut down this tool?
And by the blowback, you mean more than the question we've already talked about literally they're trying to block
yes,
access
yes,
to the
yes.
site,
I
but
mean,
the larger blowback.
I mean a call from the State Department or something equivalent.
Yeah. So your first question was dwelling on the political implications of this. The most we have to go on by inference, by induction, is when we first came out with the studies in 2002, first of China and then of Saudi Arabia. That made
a pretty good splash. And in fact, to our frustration, the URLs for those studies of 2002 still get cited and invoked very frequently, despite the fact that OpenNet has now been around for years and has far eclipsed the value of that original data. That's a signal as to just how much of a impact it made. For the Saudi Arabia data, we actually got the permission of the Saudis to do a proxy through and to run tests for 2 weeks on what they filtered. We first asked them, what do you filter? They're like, no, we're not going to tell you that. They're like, okay, well, will you give us access to your network for 2 weeks? And to our shock, they said yes. And we thanked them kindly. And after we came out with the report, we sent them a courtesy copy and again thanked them profusely, and they never wrote back. But that, I think, is some indicator that you're right, that should this start producing in real time that Twitter vision map of filtering as it happens, I think it will have a fairly, could have a fairly major impact. And this gets back to David W.'s question about, you know, a dream for this is, think about the stuff that starts that looks as inane as you can imagine, right? It doesn't get much more inane than Twitter or than blogs or than Wikipedia that, you know, months later, it's like, how did we live without it? Of course, there's like, if there weren't Twitter, we'd have to immediately invent it. It's so obvious. I would like to see this in that category, which provides a sort of momentum all unto itself. Just like now that there is peer-to-peer, there's no way not to invent it. You shut it down, someone else is going to write it. It's too good an idea. So my hope is to have that be established so that when part three of your question happens, it's not just us standing alone with some obscure service, but it's just obvious that this is part of a functioning internet, is to know where you can get to and where you can't and why. Like, that's just... Would you filter FTP? You know, I mean, rarely, as a functionality. This now gets to your second question, for which I would love to throw it open again. We have our own nascent ideas of how to do the introduction. This thing, in our view, will be ready for prime time next week. And I would love to tap the political, academic, public relations, marketing, software expertise of this room to see what's the right path to alert the world. Because as you say, Charlie, this is a civic technology whose value will increase as more people use it. The first people who show up had better be ready to kind of prime the pump or they'll go away disappointed. And the quicker you get that knee of the curve, the more useful it will be. So I would love to listen and see what people have to say about launching this thing. Yep.
Well, you're talking about bored people, and I know, like, there's a site called Ask...
So you say, I'm bored right now.
No. There's a site called ask500people.com, and it's just, like, a bunch of surveys, and the map on that looks like the map on Herdict. And I wonder if there you could partner with other sites where people are just bored, because people just spend all day creating survey questions and...
You mean like, would you be an Alaskan deep sea crab fisherman like the TV series if you were paid enough?
Yes.
The TV series is called The Last Election, involving Sarah Palin's husband. And these are all the answers coming in below?
Yeah.
So your question is, should we use this site specifically?
Or something like that, like to tap into bored people, because... I would think it would make more sense that they use Herdict instead of talk about Alaskan deep sea crab fishermen.
Would you use Herdict to report web blockages like the TV series?
I don't know. But I mean, I think that's the kind of person you might want to target to. Because, I mean, if they spend all day answering surveys like that, they might as well do something useful.
I use ask1000people.com. I find it twice as reliable. Thank you. We'll take this under advisement.
And also, Make Use Of is a blog that writes about these things. That's how I found out about Ask 500 People. So you might want to mention it to them, because they write about, like, you know, the best ways to waste time in a productive manner. So I would think if you marketed it that way to the blogosphere,
Yeah.
People would be responsive.
Got it. David?
Well, first of all, the fact that you were going with the reporter instead of am I blocked or not is a bad sign for your PR. Am I blocked or not?
You just call it am I hot or not.
Yeah, well, that would be even better. Is it? Would there be any sense to, at least initially, focusing on some geographic area and saying let's do a profile of this together so that you get good results for one spot rather than getting, you know, sort of not all that significant results for the entire world?
That's an interesting thought. Should we try to localize it?
We've just initially, just to launch.
In the Friends and Family release, we've used the Global Voices Network and the ONI existing network, OpenNet Initiative Network, to get people. So that has already meant a little bit of regional localization because there are activists in various regions. Which region would you start with?
One that hasn't been done too much and that you might get interesting results for, so I'm not sure. U.S.,
but not North
Cuba.
Korea.
Not North Korea, probably not China. I don't know. Well, what's a good rich site of filtering?
Presumably, too, with English language or common English language until we get Arabic and Chinese. What?
Mm-hmm. Bahrain is the number one reported country right now, and there's a high level of English spoken.
So Bahrain, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, there's Southern China, actually, Guangzhou University and Taiwan and Hong Kong, they're very high English speakers. And in fact, they're very intelligent. Most of them are in China Telecom, and they go around different proxies. But again, in Southern China, they go to, like, you know, universities in Taiwan or in Hong Kong. So I think we get, there's a lot of intelligence all over there in, between Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Southern China. And these are very astute students of computer scientists, et cetera. And a lot of users who are very astute, they can bypass China Telecom, etc. So I think this will be a wonderful opportunity for them to really do this kind of research to tap into that resource.
Got it. Thank you.
So over here,
yeah.
I was trying to think of a use case for me for this. I installed it on my Firefox now. I think, well, why wouldn't I just uninstall this and done here? One thing that would be,
we got rid of the uninstaller. That's one.
Something that would be useful to me is if I go and I'm sitting down at a cafe somewhere. And if I plug in and it comes up, and you know the sheep, it go to my own homepage, which isn't blocked, and the sheep is angry because it knows that this open Wi-Fi that I've gone on is crappy open Wi-Fi that's going to block me from half of where I want to go to. So it's something where the sheep could tell me about my current connection rather than what I'm connected to. Would be a use case for a lot of United States.
Tell me everything about my ISP, in other words.
Yeah, about my ISP.
And is there a way to work into the sheep? I think right now, tell me if I'm wrong, Jeffrey, but we can slice and dice the data by, we can get a report on ISP, can't we?
We could.
We could hypothetically if we ask for that feature.
Boy, that sounds good.
It's all in there. The thing is, the ISP data is a little bit dirty because we're pulling from a database of mapping IP addresses to ISPs.
That would be very useful.
Isn't that very similar to what Google is developing?
Joe asked if that's not similar to what Google is developing. I think that answer is yes to every potential question.
Oh, okay.
Are you talking about the
MLab?
Yeah.
The MLab, I think, focuses more on
network neutrality tools and measuring how your connection is.
Yeah, Google does have a project run by former Berkman affiliate and student Derek Slater, in which they are looking to marshal tools to test net neutrality violations. They're really into the propeller part of it, like latencies and stuff like that. We're like, can you get there? Not, does it take 10 or 12 milliseconds?
Right.
But at some point, those projects could and should converge. Yeah.
There's the whole social media sphere where, you know, I see that you are on Herdict, and even as you've been talking on Twitter as Herdict, and even as you've been here, you may go back and notice that your followers have increased because a couple of us have been Twittering. Yes. And so, you know, probably if you got somebody who was, underemployed and fairly savvy about media, who had like a week to put into it, you could get a lot of exposure.
Uh-huh.
So, you know where I live.
Okay, that's a highly specific suggestion. We like that. We'll be tweeting with you. Yeah, Chris.
So, in terms of harnessing the attention of the blogosphere, and especially the tech media, we sort of have to acknowledge that, well, he's not in the room right now. Charlie is probably the most famous person from Harvard in the blogosphere right now because of his IAA actions. And so anything that you do to pitch this really should jump on his coattails and pitch it as IAA fighter attacks blocking on the web or something along those lines. But, you know.
He's been paged.
Yeah. His ears were burning.
Charlie, would you be willing to substitute for your whatever your next brief is, just a big ad for Herdic to the court? That'd be great. All right, excellent. Over here?
I'm wondering if there isn't already a very large built-in audience for this among people who have sort of desk jobs at various corporations and companies. These are the people who are trying to spend most of their time going on various blogs and kind of waste their time. And they're the people who are getting frustrated with
the Dilbert Group.
Exactly.
We tap the Dilbert Group.
Exactly. They single-handedly up the soccer blog network. So these are the people who are also very frustrated when a firewall blocks their access to various things and become very kind of noisy about it. They, you know, they kind of feel short-changed by a lack of transparency. So maybe we can access them and really tell them this is a tool. Maybe foster that transparency.
So we could either try to get Scott Adams to do a comic about Herdict and thereby directly reach that audience. Or I guess Dig or something. It'd be great to be Doug. Or Slashdot. I mean, Slashdot, I mean, that's always a mixed blessing, but I think either they'll like it a lot or they will find lots of things to complain about technically and deem it to be unworthy. I don't know.
XKCD.
Which yeah, we're XKCD. So.
Right on Facebook app.
Gene,
going back to what you when you were dubbed it blocked or not, I do think the more you can make it like a game, the more people would really actually play.
So you're saying we should animate the sheep?
Oh yeah, sure. No, I mean like you know even if you I don't I have no idea what it might be, but like different ways in which it could be kind of more fun. But the second thing I would observe along those lines is that it's a great educational tool, right?
Yeah.
Like, as you're going through it, you begin to see, wow, this site that I have perfect access to. I mean, because if you're, especially if you're going to spread this around the United States, you're not going to get, except for the ISP situation, you're not going to get that much.
Well, that
so
does
more,
raise the question, I've heard it burbling around the table now, of do we want some persistence in reporting? So you actually have an identity on Herdict Web, and you can become a real mocker as someone who's like, yeah, I've made 10,000 reports kind of thing. I get a pink shooting star next to my name. And I wouldn't underestimate the value of that. I mean, the ESP game operates on points. You can't even cash in, like, skee-ball coupons, and yet people really intensely want to accrue points. So we've given some thought to that. We put it on the back burner, both because we just need to get the basic functionality working, and because we need to sort out the privacy and security issues that come with maintaining a consistent identity for a user of Herdict. That's just that much more telemetry that could be used against
them. Well, it doesn't have to be point accumulation, but just even for any given session, you know, you can go and you can play, like, those five-second games where you can play this. And, you know, while wasting time.
Right. Neat idea. Yeah.
I was wondering if you've thought about one of the things when sites get blogged, one of the first things I do is like ask my friends, and is it blocked? And is there a function within the plugin, or even you probably don't even want to have to install the plugin, but where you make it easy to like share and say, hey, this website is blocked. Can you guys? So it becomes viral in that sense.
Well, the closest we have is test a website. Now maybe that's the wrong verbiage, but that pulls up what the rest of the world is saying. Now, there are sites like
Is it downforeveryone or justme.com? That's the URL.
Twitter.
Which is very weak, though. It just tests from that one location and just says whether they can get there, too. And it's all automated, so it won't catch a number of problems. But, yeah, I mean, the basic idea here is view site report is that function, right? I mean, it's saying, tell me what the deal is with this site and what do I know about it from elsewhere. Again, if you have thoughts on... That functionality is only represented by the fact that when you say you can't get there, it gets injected into am I blocked or not for others to test. But could you have a circle of people?
Ways to actually, you know, share to a permalink or anything else with your, you know, trusted people.
Huh, interesting.
Spoken about building the whole community aspect, and once we get this final functionality out, we've talked about building a community aspect of it where stuff like that will be aided or
extending networks already.
I can't get to it. Can somebody test this? And yeah, that kind of conversation.
And it also reminds me, I'm not sure how far along we are on it, but we have embed code, so on your blog or your MySpace page, because everybody has a MySpace page here, you can actually embed either the Twitter Vision style herdometer or what we call the ticker. And the ticker could just go in the corner of your blog, and it would, here it is embedded here. It will show reports as they come in. So that's kind of a nice viral marketing thing, and it's the kind of thing I would trust Rebecca McKinnon might put on her blog. Doc would maybe put on his blog.
We have RSS feeds today.
Yeah.
RSS
and we have RSS feeds. We're definitely trying to make the data outputtable in as many forms as possible. But there was something over there. Yep.
Kind of a comment on when you're preparing for your launch to be, consider what's going to happen whenever you start having a lot more participants and how that will affect your changing of the sheet colors. Because the last thing you want is good things being marked red. And inevitably this may happen. Very well gets bad here, and this happens. Like the site advisor, find all kinds of sites that they think are good that I can show are bad. And,
right.
And this sometimes gets reported and viewed quite negatively.
Right.
So,
of course, in this case, a red sheep doesn't say anything really about the site. It's not like, how dare that site get blocked. But you're right, we want it to be as accurate as possible, and the words I keep using are critical mass. We need a critical mass of reports. Maybe that even entails a proportion, a certain number of reports of inaccessible and no countervailing accessible reports to warrant the changing of the sheep color. And we have some very simple formula now. I think it's if number of reports is greater than or equal to one, the sheep goes red.
Things will be totally different once you reach.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we can easily change that at no cost to us, the consumer. Is that right, Jeff? Okay. Yes.
After the launch, what database manager are you using? And after the launch, how are you going to handle if you're very successful and you get bigger numbers of records?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to your response time?
How robust is this, Jeffrey?
Well, we're doing some tuning right now. It's not gone massive load testing. It's also burning up some of the Berkmanshire infrastructure. So I think once I would personally prefer a more gradual ramp of activity than a gigantic surge of interest.
I would prefer a gigantic surge of interest. I would see this site going down as another milestone of our.
There may be more infrastructure made off the thing.
What database manager are you using?
MySQL. MySQL.
Okay, you will handle it. Yeah.
It's not so much. Well, the database is also being used for like six other broken projects as well.
We're going to take them down with us when we go.
You may want to move to something like Amazon or something that'll scale.
It's funny because someone at this table who's acting very smug right now, me, had that very idea and was told that we'll wait till it crashes. What was the answer on that? There are issues with Amazon.
At the very least, the images for your websites, you can kick that up to Amazon with very little.
They're actually all coming from Google. All the charts and things?
No, like the pictures of the sheep.
Yeah.
I mean, you're non-essential content. You should kick off to someone who can handle lots and lots of traffic and will scale easily. And okay, you'll have a bill for it, but, you know, someone else will pay that.
Mm-hmm. Are you volunteering?
Stick some ads on the page, I don't know.
Yeah. So we'll have to gird for success. And we have a little bit of girding for success, and it's true that a gradual ramp up would probably be better than.
But if you get put on the dig front page and your server dies, you've just lost 20,000 people who might have installed your plugin, and you may not get them again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a plan at the Brooklyn Center to split up our currently overloaded database server into three servers, and that's on the horizon. That's what I understand. We have thought about moving to Amazon, but at this point it was whether we go back and change all the architecture of the site or do we go live, and we've chosen to go live. We could still potentially do that.
We have 16 watertight compartments. Nothing could possibly
wrong.
So,
like the downloads of the extension, for example, these are things that can easily be farmed out without moving the entire backend infrastructure. That way, okay, maybe you lose some reports, but you still get people to install the software.
Right. Got it. Can I ask, for those who have laptops open, how many have visited Herdict and played around with it during this session? Interesting. The others were paying very close attention. And how many on this case, and I take no offense, this is in the name of science, how many on what you've seen would be wanting to install the Herdict add-on to Firefox or IE? How many not so interested? Yes. David, what's your what does it take to move a car off this lot today for you, David?
Well, I've already installed it, so but it's in the interest of science. It's I agree with you. It's not